Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. And Jim, we start with the good, and that came on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives yesterday by a 231-187 vote. The House voted to hold former IRS official Lois Lerner in contempt. She was the head of the tax-exempt organizations division, and between the email chain and her pleading of the Fifth Amendment, she's the key person in this scandal. The big fight, of course, was over whether Lois Lerner had waived her Fifth Amendment rights at the hearing by giving a statement and then pleading the Fifth. The Republicans, of course, say yes, she did. The Democrats say no, she didn't. In a separate vote, 250-168, so a little bit of bipartisanship there. The House also voted to request a special counsel from the Justice Department to look into that, and I'm sure the DOJ will get right on that. So, Jim, it's obviously the week of expanded investigations here on the House side, but given what a lot of the recent polls say about Americans wanting to get to the bottom of the truth and just fairness and constitutional principles, it's a good move.
Yeah, I'm really kind of intrigued by the people who say, no, she shouldn't be held in contempt above Congress. The only thing you can get down to is we've decided that this isn't a legitimate issue, which, by the way, is the same response of the White House to the Benghazi investigation. It's at least their initial response to a lot of the complaints about the NSA. It's also the complaint to the official complaints about the White House, about the healthcare.gov website were dismissed. Claims about the stimulus being misspent and also people losing their healthcare plans. Remember, it wasn't really a problem, Greg. It was only very few people. And those that had junk plans or scam plans, as I believe Frank Pallone did. So you notice this pattern that we see problems and we say, hey, what is about these problems? And there's this consistent, you know, no, it's not a problem. The problem is you. The problem is you complaining about this problem. That's what we need to deal with here. The lawyers can mitigate the finer notes of it, but basically, look, if you invoke your Fifth Amendment rights, you say, look, I'm not going to testify. One, obviously, that sets off a lot of people saying, all right, well, maybe something went wrong here. Something is worth investigating here. But then the next thing is that she goes out and she makes an opening statement. And so basically, it's like, look, I'm going to say the things I want to say, but I refuse to answer any of the questions that you guys want me to answer. And most people say the Fifth Amendment doesn't work that way. You can either do one or the other. You can either say what you want to say, or you could not testify, but you can't do both. And that's what she did, and that's one of the reasons she's in trouble. Secondly, what's the harm? What's the use here unless someone somewhere did something criminal? And so I'm really intrigued here is Democrats in the Oversight Committee have expressed frustration with Lerner's refusal to testify, but have also opposed efforts to punish her for invoking the Fifth Amendment. Well, what do you want to do then? And I think ultimately their answer is nothing.
Yes.
They just kind of want the issue to go away. And that's not what a dogged investigator or somebody who wants to get to the bottom of the scandal does. That's kind of being complicit in the cover-up. So good for the House on this. We'll see what happens. But and also good for those handful of Democrats that voted on some of these votes to say, all right, you know, we'll defy the party line and say, we'll try to get some answers here and you know, see where this thread leads.
On to the bad martini now, Jim. And yesterday, the pig book came out. This story is not related to the pig book, but that talks about government waste and all sorts of different programs that we pay for that are completely unnecessary, or at least we spend way too much on. But this report comes actually from the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, and the story comes from the Washington Free Beacon. The Department of Defense paid $150 per gallon for alternative jet fuel made from algae, more than 64 times the current market price for standard carbon-based fuels, according to the report released Wednesday. The GAO noted in its report that a Pentagon official reported paying about $150 per gallon for 1,500 gallons of alternative jet fuel derived from algal oil. And the story goes on to point out that a lot of what's going on here is you've got these alternative energy outfits. They can't produce much on a grand scale. They're kind of small operations at this point. And so this exorbitant fuel price is the government's way of funneling money to expand their operation and promote their green energy agenda, which we know went so well in the first term. So what do you make of this one?
One of the things that is frustrating about our politics is that we will say X, and as I alluded to in the previous martini, the issue is not X. Like, we will say, you know what, biofuels, they're nice, but this is, you know, as Larry Summers said, the government is a lousy venture capitalist. There are plenty of private investors who might see good profit opportunities in making biofuels. Why does the government have to do this? And they largely lost the argument on subsidies. If somebody introduced, I'm sure there's, you know, bills collecting dust right now saying, hey, let's have the government give big grants or big loans to company to make biofuel. Now, if you're creating a product that has to be sold. This is good history here over at the Free Beacon. $26 a gallon for the Great Green Fleet during the 2012 Rim of the Pacific exercise. I'm sure that has the Chinese quaking in their boots. $59 per gallon for alcohol-based jet fuel for the Air Force used in 2012. I don't know about you, Greg, but alcohol-based jet fuel strikes me as for $59 a gallon strikes me as a terrible waste of taxpayer money and a terrible waste of alcohol. It's kind of like how, you know, ethanol depletes the nation's corn chip supply. Why are we taking things that we like? Why are we, you know, that we could use for other stuff and turn into this? At least with the algal-based fuel, there's not like we're going around saying, oh, you know, I couldn't wait to have a big bowl of algae or something like that. Having said that, $150 a gallon, once you're creating something that requires, actually, this is also like hydroprocessed esters and fatty acids, which includes vegetable oils, animal fat, waste grease, and algae oil being processed and turned into jet fuel. This is really neat, but once you're, you know, paying $150 a gallon, when conventional jet fuel is about $2.88, $3 a gallon, like, I'm looking at it realizing, Greg, when's the last time you paid $2.88 a gallon? That's really cheap, all right? So, like, you actually have jet fuel less expensive than, you know, filling up your tank, and yet the government feels the need to go around and spend about $150 a gallon for algae oil, which, like, you know, at this point, just build a pipeline.
Well, and it says 1,500 gallons, which fortunately we didn't shell out any more money for gallons at that exorbitant price. But it also goes to show this push for alternative energy. It just doesn't have the capacity to even begin to counter. Like you mentioned yesterday, we're in an oil-based economy, to even really be a drop in the bucket compared to what we would need to replace our existing methods of providing energy. So it really is kind of a pipe dream.
It is a good metaphor there. Since, by the way, that bucket, $23.
That's right. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And you know it's a crazy day when Harry Reid blaming the Koch brothers for climate change doesn't win for crazy martini. But we go to our old friend Charlie Crist. Not too long ago, we talked about his ever-evolving position on abortion. Now he's changing his tune on why he left the Republican Party in 2010. I think most people who study the issue soberly realize he was way ahead of Marco Rubio. Then Marco Rubio caught up to him, was way ahead of him, and was going to win the Republican primary for U.S. Senate that year. So Charlie Crist left the party, ran as an independent, and got creamed by Marco Rubio anyway. But that is not the history that Charlie Crist is now trying to sell to Florida voters. He was on Fusion with Jorge Ramos, who gave the right question right out of the box, and Charlie Crist proves once again he has no shame.
The moment in which you decided just to leave the Republican Party was because you were going to lose to Marco Rubio.
No, it was because I couldn't be consistent with myself mm-hmm. and my core beliefs and stay with a party that was so unfriendly toward the African-American president. I'll just go there. You know, because I was a Republican and I saw the activists and what they were doing, it was intolerable to me. As I told you before, my mother and father taught my three sisters and me to treat everybody well. We're all children of God. And I saw how the party, some of them, were treating the African-American president. And I couldn't take it anymore. And that's a big part of why I left the party.
Jim, obviously this is a line of bull, but you have to give him a little bit of sympathy. If anybody's going to have trouble staying consistent with his core principles, since he has none, it's going to be Charlie Crist.
Well, I had heard some excerpts of that interview. Greg, I was taught by my parents to treat everybody with respect and with, you know, with love. And that's why I'm standing up to the Republicans who are all racist. There's that aspect of the irony. He's troubled by the Republicans being an anti-minority party, and yet he did everything he could to beat Marco Rubio, Cuban-American, Hispanic senator. That, you know, he did everything. He says, you know, the party's now anti-immigrant, as I posted on a campaign spot the other day. He was no problem playing the, we got to seal the border, we got to enforce the laws, you know, all that kind of stuff back in 2010. He'll say it, so, as you said, so shamelessly, so, you know, utter disregard for everything that's happened before. It's as if he's really convinced whoever he's speaking to doesn't remember anything before 5 minutes ago. He thinks, maybe I just solved the whole mystery here, Greg. You've seen the movie Memento?
Yes.
Which Guy Pearce has a memory that resets every 15 minutes and he doesn't, you know, remember it. So all of a sudden, you know, maybe literally Charlie Crist remembers nothing other than 15 minutes ago, and he genuinely means it because he doesn't remember being, you know, emphasizing how much he's a conservative Republican back in 2010 and being a Republican and being elected statewide as a Republican a whole bunch of times in the state of Florida. So assuming that's not the case, there's something particularly shameless to say, hey, you know that group I used to be affiliated with and did everything I could to ingratiate myself with and try, you know, was the nominee of lots of times and all that stuff? Yeah, they're all a bunch of hateful racists, and that's why you got to vote for me. Why would any Democrat think that Crist is going to be any more loyal to their principles? Why are they convinced, well, he wouldn't betray us, you know? Isn't this kind of like the mistress being really upset that the husband who's cheating on his wife has a third girlfriend or something? Now people are going to accuse me of accusing him of sex scandal and stuff. So there you go. So yeah, way to go, Charlie Crist. Way to go. You joined the pantheon of Nevada, and Alan Grayson is a regular, you know, stuff like that.
Yes.
So,
well, way to go, Florida,
don't
again.
Let's do a way to go, Florida. You know, Florida voters, you're on notice.
Yeah. So I guess the next interview, maybe you should have him roll up his sleeves to see if he really is suffering from the memento situation.
There you go, little tattoos saying, you know, right, you are a Democrat now, don't forget, that kind of stuff.
The alleged racism apparently also forced him to change his position on every relevant issue that he once held before. And thirdly, I didn't have the clip of this, but right after this discussion, Jorge Ramos asked him about the fact that, and you alluded to this, that he wasn't for in-state tuition for illegal dreamers back in 2006, but he is now. And once again, he just shamelessly says, this is about the future. This isn't about the past.
That really is his, in a nutshell, his statement. You know, really, if you forget everything I've ever done, I am the right candidate for you. That's Charlie Crist in one sentence.
Hats off to Ramos for asking tough questions. Others have done it too. We've played the clips. And Florida, if you screw this one up, even if you don't really like Rick Scott that much, this is not a hard choice. All right, Jim, yeah. Have a good day.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.